kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up, some big games to talk about today. We're starting things off. Tim Ekibis is here. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm great. That's a lie. I'm tired, but I'm great. I'm great tired. I am eyeballing Dreamcast games on eBay in the second, my second screen here.
Oh, no.
I think I need a few more.
What are you looking up?
Right now, I don't have the Dreamcast version of Soul Reaver, which I imagine is probably the best version of that game. Soul Reaver was a classic.
Good choice.
Yeah. I don't know. I posted a picture of my Dreamcast, collection, yesterday as of this recording was 9/9/2019, marking the 20th anniversary of the Dreamcast's release in the U.S., one of the most famous dates in the history of gaming. Final Fantasy VIII also came out that day. Little known fact, I guess.
And then 10 years later was the Beatles Rock Band.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, that's my favorite Rock Band game. I wish that they had gotten to do more, band spotlight Rock Band releases. After the Beatles one, I was really hoping for a Queen one, and it didn't happen. It's like Rock Band 3 happened the year after, and then things started to fizzle, yeah. I guess, for that particular part of the market. It's such a bummer because, I guess that would have been 2009. It was Beatles Rock Band and Guitar Hero Metallica, which are like the two best of those. The two big plastic instrument series each did a band spotlight game, and they were both probably the best entries in their respective series, arguably. I mean, I like not in terms of quantity of songs, but I like the focus and all the production value and stuff that went into both of those games.
Oh yeah.
And would have liked to see a lot more, but
Activision just released every game imaginable and just flooded the market.
Yeah, it just got ugly and oversaturated, and I guess the generation was kind of starting to wind down at that point, so I don't know. It's a bummer.
What is not a bummer is your amazing Dreamcast collection, though.
Yeah, it's real. not to boast, but I did spend, years and money. I didn't get to buy a lot of Dreamcast games at the time because, one, the Dreamcast came out when, I was in college. It came out my first week of college, and I did not buy it. I was in Toys R Us that day, but I was buying Final Fantasy VIII, not a Dreamcast. the following summer, I got my Dreamcast. I bought Marvel vs. Capcom 2, and then then a guy across the hall from me in college had a self-boot copy of Virtua Tennis burned to a CDR, and I was like, oh, you just burn the CD and put it in your system. You don't have to mod it or anything. Then I started playing a lot of Dreamcast games, but you'll say, wow, you dirty pirate, you killed the Dreamcast, but the Dreamcast was dead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the PS2 came out, and Sega was like, yeah, we're done. We're done here, thanks.
They gave up.
They just got nobody. People just wanted the PS2. They were all in on the PS2 and that Metal Gear Solid 2 demo, and Dreamcast just couldn't get that foothold it needed, despite being just so awesome. Working online play out of the gate in 1999, you didn't have to buy an adapter. It's built into the system, ready to go. Freaking so many cool games, so many arcade perfect ports, because it was basically running arcade hardware. Sega at its creative best, putting out all this wild shit. And most of it at this point is disseminated to other systems and they're on everything at this point. But man, at the time, it was just so cool.
It was Sega at its weirdest. I mean, look at games like they had Bass Fishing that came with a fishing controller. They had
Which
Seaman.
Is one of the best games.
Seaman came with the microphone. Samba de Amigo had the fucking maracas with it. Typing of the Dead, you needed a keyboard. I mean, it was just them at their weirdest.
It's like Sega at their most Nintendo. Yeah. Just how many portables can we throw on here? But
how much shit can we make you buy?
Yeah, so at a certain point, like, I started poking around, in those years after the Dreamcast died. It's like, it was real easy to find brand new sealed games for, like, a buck around. And, so I started, buying a few games. I was like, oh, this would be cool to have. And then one thing led to another, and I was just like, you know what? I want to get physical copies. Like, I'm not that into game collecting anymore. When it came to the Dreamcast, it's like, I want physical copies of all those Dreamcast games that I love. And it doesn't matter if they're North American or Japanese, which is good because the North American versions of a lot of those games are super fucking expensive. Like the Giga Wings, like, oh my God. I got a pretty, quite a lot of Dreamcast games. It's like 70, 80 Dreamcast games.
Yeah, you got a chunk. I don't see Royal Rumble though. I was surprised.
No, I don't have WWE Royal Rumble, which is, the best part of that game is that you can, like, there's a button
choose
to, like,
not to buy it.
No. Oh, yeah, you can do that. It's not a great wrestling game, but the best part about it is that there's a button to call for a weapon, so your wrestler will just, like, whistle or, like, raise his hand or something, and a fucking steel chair will come rocketing from off screen into their hands.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's hilarious. I mean, how much is that game? Like, it is only worth, I think it was, that game was based on, like, the, I don't know if that was based on the SmackDown game. It must have been the SmackDown games, or whether it was based on, like, what is that other series, like, the, that I hated? I don't remember. Let's see. Royal Rumble, Sega Dream. I think it was based on the SmackDown games, but it was just so limited in what you could actually do.
Well, they only had the Rumble mode, didn't they?
There was, like, immerse yourself into the chaos of a, quote, Royal Rumble match with up to nine superstars in the ring at one time. Better watch your back, because in this type of match, there are no allegiances or friendships. Nine superstars. What's your weapon of choice? There's a weapon. I feel like some of these screenshots don't appear to be in the ring, so I wonder if they're like, I think there was a couple other match top types, but it was really sparse.
Yeah.
It was, but not
still, nine wrestlers at once is still pretty impressive.
It is, I guess, at that time, because most games just did four. So nine, that was a big deal. I shouldn't downplay that.
That was a landmark achievement in wrestling video game technology.
It is a feather in that game's cap.
That is the feather in that game's cap.
Otherwise, I think it might have had, like, a singles match, like a one-on-one mode, and then it was just, like, the Royal Rumble, and that was it. That was it. And it could be mine for $14.91 shipped free on eBay.
There you go.
not thinking about it.
That's going in the wish list.
We'll think about it here.
I also see you have Rez. Do you have the Trance Vibrator?
I do not. That was only for PS2, I believe. I don't think there was a Dreamcast version of that particular. Oh,
I thought there was a Dreamcast one, too.
Dreamcast Trance. Okay. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I thought that was... This is important stuff, people.
This is. We need to know if this Trance Vibrator exists on the Dreamcast or if it was PS2 only. This is important information.
It's only PS2.
Ah.
Yeah, I can't do that. But Rez is my... Whew. I mean, it's on everything now, but, like, Rez is one of my favorite games of all time, and I played a ton of... Like, that game was unreal. At the time, playing it on Dreamcast. Like, holy crap.
It's still a trip today.
Yeah. Ikaruga made its debut on Dreamcast. I don't have a copy of that, because I mostly played the GameCube version. And it's, that's out now on other things. I've thought about getting a Dreamcast version of it, but...
What is your rarest game that you own?
Oh, for Dreamcast?
Yeah.
Where's the picture so I can think about it? It is probably Not one of the Japanese. I bet you it's Project Justice. That's my guess. That game, well, yeah. Yeah, I think it's Project Justice for that I have the North American version of. That's a pretty pricey game.
I haven't even heard of it.
Oh, that's the sequel to Rival Schools.
Oh.
Oh, that game, and that is actually, you know, other Dreamcast games have been ported all over the place. That game has not. Not in the US anyway. There was a PS2 release in Japan, but not in the US. So the only way to play an English version of that game is on the Dreamcast.
Wow.
Which is probably why it's so g-darn expensive. Yeah, but there's some other games like Cannon Spike, Gigawing 2. Their North American versions are worth quite a bit, but I got the Japanese ones because I didn't want to spend that much.
Hey, those games works.
They're mostly in English, too. And if they're not in English, you don't need to really understand the menus. I mean, because I was a dirty, filthy pirate, like, I would just sign on. I would download anything that, like, showed up online for me to download. So I was getting the Japanese version of the games before they came out in the U.S. So through the course of playing with my Dreamcast, I got very comfortable with playing games in Japanese. I played through all of Jet Set Radio in Japanese before the U.S. version was available. And the Japanese version is better, in my opinion, if I could be a snob about it.
And why?
Because the U.S. version added like two or three extraneous levels kind of like a little over halfway through the game, and I just don't like them. It also has Dragula in it, for better or worse.
How dare you besmirch Dragula?
Yeah, one, Jet Set Radio. For another, yeah, Jet Set Radio is also just a much better name than Jet Grind Radio, but... yeah, I just think it's a tighter package. You know, look at this here. Yeah, Gigawing 2 is also expensive, but I have the Japanese version, so yeah. I'd say Project Justice is probably the most expensive one in there. I also have both the American and Japanese versions of Machin X, which was a Mega Ten spinoff game released on Dreamcast. And the U.S. version was censored because in the Japanese version, like, there's actual swastikas for the Nazi demons in the game.
Oh, God.
All your Dreamcast trivia right here.
We're learning things today.
Yeah, I will say my greatest shame, though, is I still have not played Skies of Arcadia.
Really?
Yeah, I was, like, looking at this, and I'm like, that is something I actually need to fix in the near future. I am going to sit down and play through Skies of Arcadia because I know that game is incredible, and...
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic.
It's sitting right here on my shelf waiting for me to play.
I was going to say, if you didn't have it, good friend Zach Lyons actually sent me a copy of Skies of Arcadia Legends on the GameCube because I was looking for it, and he just hooked me up. I was going to say, if you needed to play it, I could always pass it on to you.
I'll play it on the Dreamcast because, you know, Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But speaking of things that are much more affordable than Dreamcast games, should we get some reviews?
Yes. Let's do it. Hell of a transition.
Hey, I do what I can.
Yeah.
Hey, these games are much cheaper than Dreamcast games.
Yeah, than hard to find Dreamcast games.
Yeah. Anyway, first game to talk about tonight is called River City Girls, developed and published by WayForward, released September 5th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $29.99. There's trouble once again on the mean streets of River City, but this time the boys are in over their heads, and this all-new entry in the legendary beat-em-up series, hot-blooded heroes Kuni and Riki have been captured, leaving it to their hard-hitting girlfriends Kyoko and Misako to serve up some payback. Tim, tell us about River City Girls.
River City Girls. See, I missed being my 100th review by one game. We're so close. Just that darn Catherine got in the way, aww, as she is wont to do. It's thematically appropriate. Anyways, River City Girls. Holy crap. This game, man. From the second this was announced, when they showed nothing, it had my intense curiosity. I have something of a reputation with the River City series.
Oh, do tell.
Yeah, I loved it enough to make a movie out of the first game, you know, like 15 years ago. So that's sort of something. Any of those games that X-Strike made movies out of, like, are instantly, like, people associate with me, so Metal Gear and Resident Evil, and maybe not Parappa so much, but I guess it's River City, Metal Gear, Resident Evil, but yeah, especially River City. So I love River City Ransom a lot. It's one of my favorite NES games, if not my favorite NES game, one of the greatest beat 'em ups of all time. And when Arxis bought the River City, you know, the whole Kneo-kun license, like a few years back, I was so excited because I was like, oh my God, Arxis Art plus River City, like, this is going to be awesome, right? Mm-hmm. And I've been like a little bummed out since then, because they've pretty much, like, they've been putting out games, but they've been pretty much just using like high res versions of the old like NES sprites, and not like doing new artwork. And that's a bummer. Like, I wanted to see new, you know, high res, awesome looking, well animated artwork. Well, hello, River City Girls. Holy shit. Yeah, like, I guess WayForward, you know, went to Arxis and pitched this game and got to make it. And, like, my God, this game looks amazing. It is 2D sprites, just gorgeous, like, so well done from top to bottom. Like, the character models are, the character sprites are big. Like, they're not squat like the Kneo-kun ones. Like, they are a good-sized character. They are just, like, so detailed with the characters' expressions, with their animations, with just like the detail and the variety of all the characters. Like, of course there are palette swaps of some of the different gang members, but, you know, they all look good. Like, even with that, there's still like a large variety of enemies, you know, dudes in suits and cheerleaders and masked luchadors, cops, the police, and, you know, 5-0, of course,
coming for you.
5-0. And aside from the characters, just like every screen of the game is really lushly detailed with, you know, unique buildings and trees and background elements and just like all kinds of stuff. Like, there is no copy paste stuff here. Like, something I'll probably rag on later when we're coming to the final determination of this game is, like, you know, I saw some people out there, it's just like, oh man, is $30 worth it for this game? You know, I thought it was just this cute little indie game. But, like, you know, if you look at, having played a lot of indie games and reviewed a lot for this show, there's a lot of games, you know, around like the $10, $15 price point where, you know, they save money on assets because they reuse them a lot. They'll kind of use like one tile set for an area. And, like, that's fine. Like, it doesn't deteriorate for the quality of the game. But when you look at a game like this with like this much, poured into the art, like, it makes a difference. And you can see, like, you know, what that extra, you know, $15 or paying $30 gets you in terms of quality, you know, overall production quality of the game.
Yeah. I know the price point has been a topic of discussion among a lot of people who were concerned that it might be a little bit high, but it sounds like there's definitely enough effort in the game to justify it.
Like I said, we'll get there. I was like almost like popping off on a couple people on like Facebook and like ranting on Twitter when I was like sitting thinking about it. Okay. But anyways, so yeah, River City Girls, you got two playable characters. You got Kyoko and Misako. They have, different move sets. They get different moves as they go. I mean, they kind of start out, you know, like, okay, here's your basic combo. You get light attack, strong attack. You can attack when dashing. You can attack when jumping. There are grab attacks only when an enemy is stunned. And you will level up as you go. I think this game does a really good job with kind of splitting the difference between like a few different versions of the River City Kneo-kun progression system that I've seen. So you do level up as you go. Just as you beat enemies, you will gain experience and you'll level up. And as you level up, you will get some stat bonuses automatically, and you will unlock some moves automatically. And other times you will just like unlock the ability to learn a new move at the dojo. But just by leveling up, just by kind of grinding your way through, you will get equipped with enough stuff to do some damage in this game. Yeah, like I said, the characters, they play differently. They have totally different move sets. Misako is much more of a brawler wrestler character, so obviously she's my favorite. But Kyoko is also fun. She gets some Chun-Li moves. She literally has, you know, the lightning legs. She has the spinning bird kick, though her signature is without a doubt her rainbow power dab, which is pretty fantastic just in how hard, because you hit somebody with your dab and they go flying across the screen. So it is actually pretty, it comes out really fast and it's really great for kind of clearing some space around your character. There are some moves that use a special meter, and the special meter builds back up pretty quickly, so it's not something you have to be too, you know, careful about using. They just basically put the meter there, it seems, so you don't sit there and just spam your stone hands and your dragon feet endlessly. Like, you actually have to, you know, throw out some punches to build the meter back up. Let's see. There are, of course, many a shop in this game. This is not a, you know, level by level brawler. It is an essentially an open world action RPG, more or less, really, if that's what it is. And that's what the original River City Ransom was. And what made it so cool is that, you know, you go out and you can explore. They are like, there are a few nonsensical restrictions at certain points in the game where it's just like, you can't go up this alley. It's locked. No real reason. But it does keep you headed in the right direction, which I do appreciate. That actually was kind of an issue a couple times in River City Underground, because the world was just so big and sometimes the objectives were a little vague. You'd end up wandering around a lot before you figured out what you needed to do. But there are shops aplenty for you to spend the money that you pick up from beating up goons. So there's, you know, all kinds of shops, ice cream shops, sushi bars, burger places, and each piece, each item will give you a, you know, usually restores health, usually also gives you a bonus to one of your stats at the same time. So you can kind of like, you know, you're going to want to spend money to buy new moves at the dojo, which is incidentally run by one of the dragon twins from Double Dragon. by the way, one of his voice lines is, "I miss my brother."
Oh God,
which is funny. But yeah, you could just go. I just went out and like mostly invested in moves first, but you know, you could also go out and just buy a bunch of food to build up your stats, or other items to build up your stats. There's all kinds of stuff, and that's cool. And when you buy an item, something I like is that it then shows you what that item does on the shop menu. So, you know, if you're buying something a second time, like, you know what it does, or like, okay, well, maybe I want to buy something else just so I know. And when you buy an item and put it in your inventory, it tells you right there in your inventory what it does. So once the item is purchased, you know what it does. And you don't have to remember it or write it down on a sheet. So that's cool. Quality of life stuff.
Always good.
Yeah. And again, like all the shops are unique. Just fresh art everywhere in this game. So money can be spent on, yeah, new moves, food, other stat boosting items. As you know, there's boss battles throughout the game. You know, there's not a lot of side quests. I just realized that, because early on they give you like, there's a couple of side quests. Maybe I just haven't found them. Now I'm like paranoid. But I swear I've only done like three. yeah, along with the main quest, there is a few side quests that you get where it's like, oh, okay, you have to go get this item for this person. Like right early on, there's one River City High that you can do that, which will give you a nice chunk of stuff. But yeah, as you complete quests throughout the game, you get like a dump of experience and money right away. So even if you're dying a lot, and the death penalty in this game is only losing a quarter of your money, which isn't that bad at all. In past River City games, you lose half, and which could definitely hurt quite a bit when you're saving up to buy like some big move or something like that. Here you only lose a quarter of your money, and that's not that bad. And if you're, you know, smart, that won't happen, because pretty much as soon as you get in danger, usually you can start sprinting back to get to, you know, a restaurant or something to buy some food and heal up. And of course, you can bring food with you. There are, you know, boss battles scattered throughout, which, you know, those are all unique enemies, and I won't talk about them much because there's like some spoiler fun stuff there.
I know the soundtrack gives away some of them, so if you're worried about spoilers. Oh,
fucking Abobo is in the game. He's a Abobo is in like all of these games. And Abobo, let me tell you, is He is rough. That dude is kicking my ass. My ass has been kicked. It's like, that was the point where I got to him and I was just like, oh man, like this is, oh man, this might be a brick wall of big muscly meat. So downed enemies, if you get down to the last enemy and they're dizzy, sometimes they'll like beg for mercy and you can recruit them. And once you recruit a enemy, they basically act as like an assist from a versus game where you can just tap a button and they'll jump in and do a move. So that's cool. That's another cool offensive thing. There are moments where like it'll lock you to a screen and you have to clear all the enemies in order to break the lock and move on. But yeah, just like playing the game is a freaking boatload of fun. Like, it feels good as a beat 'em up. You get a ton of moves as a good progression to unlocking the moves and getting more moves to add to your arsenal. I was playing last night and I threw like this dragon uppercut move that Misako got and I completely forgot that I had it. I was like, oh shit, right, this move. You can combo things, knocking enemies up into the air, knocking them against walls, and it just looks good the whole time. It just like everything looks great. Misako has a stone cold stunner.
Amazing.
Yeah, I was looking at the animation of the dojo, and it's called the stun gun, which is what it was called, you know, before when he was stunning Steve Austin. And I was just like, okay, because it didn't tell me it was a grab. She's like, okay, it's a kick, and then she turns around. And it looks like she does an RKO. I'm like, wait. It's called a stun gun. Is this just a stone cold stunner? And sure enough, Misako just straight up has a stone cold stunner as her special grab, and that is awesome.
And it's beautiful.
And it is beautiful. Yeah, it just looks like, you know, the kick to the stomach, the turn, the grab of the head, the fall to the ground. It looks fantastic. She also has a power bomb. Kyoko gets a reverse Frankensteiner that she can do from behind. It's fun. And like, yeah, each character gets a ton of moves, gives you a bunch of options to play with. And it's just like the game is just like so lush in its design. Not for nothing, you know, like the game is also fully voice acted. All of the character dialogue, there's these like little manga cutscenes that give you backstory, on the characters. And there is some like legit funny dialogue in there, which I think you could probably come to expect from WayForward games. Like, they have some good, clever writers there.
Oh, yeah.
But also on the sound design, like, holy crap, the soundtrack to this game is amazing. It's huge. It's like, what, 50 tracks? I think you said when you I'm like, yeah, it's 50 tracks. There is just so many different songs. You know, some songs will only play for like three screens of the game, you know, but it keeps changing things up. Like, I think within River City High alone, there's two different background tracks. So it's not like, oh, there's like, here's the overworld track. Here's your one shop theme. Here's your boss theme. Here's this. Like, no. Like, and it's not even just like each section of town has its own piece of music. Like, sections within each section of town has its own piece of music. Like, it is, you know, it's striking kind of a synthy 80s vibe. You have these just like great vocal tracks in there. You have the boss themes are all featuring Chip Zoll, who is a chiptune artist who is very good. Who was very good at her job, as I say. So all the boss themes have like that kind of chiptune flavor to them. Our personal friend Dale North did a little bit of music for this game.
In the arcade.
So you can't play any of those arcade games. But the thing I thought is really cool, so you're in, and this just kind of shows like the level of like detail in this game, is that he wrote like four, five, or six different like little 30-second, minute-long, like, you know, eight-bit ditties. And as you walk around the arcade, like, they fade up and down as you're closer to different machines. So it actually, like creates the experience of walking around an arcade and, like, different machine. Like, as you get closer to a different machine, obviously you hear its sound more. Mm-hmm. And that is such a cool effect. Like, what a useless little detail. Like, they could have just thrown some sound effects in there in, like, a regular track. But no, they go out of the way of hiring Dale North to write a bunch of, like, little songs to go in this arcade just to go that little extra mile.
Yeah.
Like that's
there's a lot of heart and love in the game.
There is a ton of heart and love in game. But this is like, when you start talking about, like, is this game worth $30? It's just a beat-em-up. Like, one, I hate people dissing on beat-em-ups, because beat-em-ups are great. Like, I don't know if you idiots know this out there, but, like, fucking, like, Devil May Cry games, those are pretty much freaking beat-em-ups. Dynasty Warriors games are actually beat-em-ups. Like, y'all are playing beat-em-ups. Like, beat-em-ups never went away. It's just, like, I don't know. It feels like kind of the old school, you know, your traditional, like, 2D beat-em-up just started getting the stigma about it. And it's like, why do you think these games have to be, you know, 10 or 15 bucks? Like, yeah, it's a beat-em-up, but it's, like I said earlier, it's essentially a action RPG, just like classic River City Ransom. And, like, when you look at the level of production quality that went into this game in terms of its graphics and animations, its sound design, its backgrounds, like, the music, the voice acting, fully voice acted. And then it's like I compare it to, you know, not to, to pick on a game in particular, but like, you know, Bloodstained came out a few months ago. That game's $40, and I would consider the production value of this game to be much higher and more consistent than Bloodstained was. Like, I didn't particularly care for the look of Bloodstained, but like, oh, it's polygonal, it's a Metroidvania game, so therefore it's like I don't remember people crowing about the price of that game, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, this, you look at the level, the level of production quality in this game and like how much fun it is to play, and you know, you're certainly going to get a good number of hours out of playing it. I think it's kind of silly to question, I feel like, is $30 too much for this game? It's like most games probably are way cheaper than they should be, honestly. Like, you know, true. Back in my day, I paid 80 goddamn dollars for a beat 'em up called Spider-Man Venom Maximum Carnage.
You poor sod.
And that's, I mean, games, that's how much games were back then. I also paid, you know, 70, 80 bucks for, you know, your Chrono Trigger and your Final Fantasy 3 at the time and all that stuff. You know, only like first party Nintendo games usually were 60. And that was in early 90s dollars. So it's just like, games today are all over the place with their pricing. But I don't see how in the world, like, River City Girls is not worth $30. Like, come on, people.
Well, your official verdict for 30 bucks is?
Buy it. Absolutely buy it. This is, like, when I think of, you know, not to get all hyperbolic when I've been playing this game for a week, but as a big fan of beat-em-ups, when I think of, like, the best beat-em-ups of all time, right? And, like, what made those beat-em-ups great? Like, Streets of Rage 2 and River City Ransom and, like, Turtles in Time and Scott Pilgrim versus the World. You know, you had great graphics, you had a great soundtrack, you had fighting that felt, you know, like just great, just great, great feeling combat. And like, this game ticks all of those boxes in a way that, you know, I feel like Castle Crashers, that's another good one. You know, it ticks all those boxes in a way a game hasn't, like, probably since like Scott Pilgrim and Castle Crashers initially came out. You know, a lot of, you know, I reviewed, that Russian game, Mother Russia Bleeds, which is a good, solid beat-em-up, like, no hate on it at all. But you can definitely see, like, how, like, and feel how this is, like, a step up into that, like, oh, like, this is one of the best beat-em-ups ever made. Like, period. It is. It just is. And yeah, it's absolutely worth it. Worth it for 30 bucks. And buy the damn soundtrack. Like, if nothing else, please buy the soundtrack. It is amazing. So good.
And we're actually going to be featuring a couple of songs from the soundtrack at the end of the show.
Yeah. So stay tuned to the end of the show, and you'll get a taste. Give you a little taste.
I bought the soundtrack just to play it on the show.
Yeah. Didn't want to just get the tracks for me. Pay that money. Hand it over.
Goddamn right. I could have just gotten it from you, but no. I want to support awesome music.
And it's
awesome,
worth it.
Soundtracks. It's awesome games. Soundtrack. I canceled my Borderlands 3 diamond loot chest, and I could only get like store credit back, so I got Xbox credit, and I'm going to use that to buy River City Girls tonight.
Yeah, heck yeah.
So there you go. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Creature in the Well, developed and published by Flight School Studio, released September 6th on Xbox One, Switch, and PC for $14.99. Creature in the Well is a top-down, pinball-inspired hack-and-slash dungeon crawler. As the last remaining Bot C unit ventured deep into the desert mountain to restore power to an ancient facility haunted by a desperate creature, uncover and upgrade powerful gear in order to free the city of Mirage from a deadly sandstorm. Tim, tell us about Creature in the Well.
Whew, man, I just like looked at the clock and I was like, man, I talk a lot about River City Girls, but I knew that was going to happen. I have a lot of things to say about it. It's a phenomenal game. Anyways, Creature in the Well. So yeah, it was pitched as, you know, it is pinball inspired in playing it. It struck me more like, and this is kind of like a subdivision of pinball really, but it struck me more like Breakout or Arkanoid, than necessarily pinball. Maybe I'm splitting hairs, but I think that like is a more accurate description of like kind of what you do in the game. So yeah, you are a robot trying to reactivate this giant machine to push back the sandstorm. You are like way late to the party of trying to push get this thing working. The help ticket did not go through, did not create properly, did not get you moving. But you're here now, and that's what's important. Yeah, these people were trying to build this machine inside of a mountain, and I'm like, oh, whoops, there's some weird giant creature living in the mountain. Maybe we should have picked a different build site, but oh well, here we are. So they got this whole machine up in there, and the idea is, yeah, so you are this robot, and the game kind of takes place from this, like, overhead perspective for the most part. Like, sometimes it gets a little three quarters. Mostly it's playing overhead, because you need to see the field and bat around balls. And see what you're doing there. But the game has, like, a really cool art style, because the camera will move around between, you know, overhead and more of, like, a three-quarters perspective, and just, like, there's a really nice level of just, like shading and lighting around in the mountain as you're moving around. Like, it's like the game is a pleasure to look at, is what I'm getting at. So what you actually do is you have to re-energize the machine. To do that, you need to gather energy to open these doors to then power all the who's a what's and gizmos inside the thing to get things going. Far be it for me to not to enjoy a game where you're just doing maintenance. It's more or less what you're doing in Dead Space. It's just like Chief O'Brien's bad day. So yeah, you get two tools that you work with. One is like a sword thing. These items can take on different forms, and I'm having trouble remembering what the initial form of them was, because I spent most of the game using like a sword and a frying pan. So yeah, you have one weapon. With what it does is basically you'll have these little, you know, your these little ping pong white ball things, and you need to hit the balls with your frying pan or whacker item, and that will send the ball flying off in a line, and then the ball will bounce off what are more or less like, you know, bumpers or targets. And after you hit them enough times, it builds up energy and the target will go down. Then perhaps more targets will pop up. Your other thing where, you're Swiffer. So you'll hold down the button, you'll swing your sword out. And if there's any balls bouncing around in your vicinity, it will gather them up in front of you. So you can gather like, you know, like 8 balls up in front of you and then whack all of them with your frying pan all at once to send them all flying, like at an angle off at like a cluster of these nodes that you need to, activate or deactivate. Suck power from? Yeah, you're getting power off of them in order to move forward. So, yeah, the game ends up being like, okay, well, I'm going to gather up some balls. I'm going to aim them kind of like at this certain angle so they fly in amongst like a group of like bumpers and nodes and like bounce around between them and like build up a bunch of electricity all at once. And it's then they bounce down and it's cool and satisfying. like Breakout. So, yeah, it does that. And as you go through, so each, you know, kind of room is basically like a one screen thing. Like, you know, the camera will pull out so it fills the screen, and you kind of got to, like, some are puzzles, some are just kind of like, you know, just there for your hitting a ball around satisfaction. But you'll be in situations where it's like, okay, well, you have, like there's hazards. So these things will pop up and they'll shoot like a laser across the floor. So you have to dodge that. There's a dodge button to dodge out of the way. So you have to kind of like hit the ball at that, dodge out of the way, then maybe try to catch the ball, hit it in another direction. You'll get, there's some nodes when you hit a ball at it, like it becomes supercharged with energy. And when it comes back at you, if you don't catch it or hit it back, it will do damage to you. There are cannons that will just, you know, shoot at your ass. Good old fashioned cannons. You'll have some rooms that are like, they'll have like a time puzzle where you'll knock down one node and then you'll have like 10 seconds to knock down the next one and then 10 seconds to do the next one. So you got to be fast and quick with your aim. So, you know, each area will have, you know, a number of rooms to it. And then when you get to the end of said area, the creature, the eponymous creature in the well, will pop up and be like, yo, I am sick of your shit. But the creature will not attack you directly. Usually it'll conveniently towards the end of each area, there's like some kind of square floor, which it will pull down into a pit. And you'll have to kind of go through like a series of hazards all in a row while the creature, will like make these little orbs that will kind of chase after you while you're trying to deal with all the other crap going on. And that's kind of the shape that a boss battle takes in this game. So once you get through one of those, then you'll get to the end of that particular area. You'll power up a machine. Then it's like, okay, cool. This part of this giant machine is now powered up. So it's like, you know, you'll do the first area, then that unlocks a couple more, and then that unlocks more after that. And that's the progression of the game. So yeah, it's kind of like a neat, breakout-y, like overhead dungeon crawler thing. My beefs with the game is that like some of the rooms like got a little, I felt were a little repetitive with their goals. And just trying to, like, there's literally some rooms where it's just like, okay, here's just like a grid of these, panels. Like pretty much every level has one or two of these. And it's just like, okay, well, it seems like more of like a personal satisfaction room where it's just going to feel good to knock a bunch of balls in between all these panes and hear them go. But it did feel like a little bit repetitive in with some of the room designs. Like, I'm not sure that I was totally grabbed by kind of like the gameplay flow of like, okay, I'm going to grab a bunch of balls and then hit them in a lot of areas. Cause like, I think I wanted more, and maybe it's, you know, just how I played the game, but it didn't feel like I could just sit there and bat a ball back and forth with, you know, certain hazards. Like if I shot a ball at like one of those nodes that like would superheat the ball and shoot it straight back at me, like what I wanted to do is then just like swing my frying pan while the ball's in motion, hit it straight back at that thing. But I just felt like the collision on that wasn't tight enough. So, and I would end up just getting hit in the face and taking damage. So it just made more sense to like, okay, well, I'm just going to play it safe. I'm going to catch these balls with my sword first and then hit them back. And that creates more of like a, like it's not a good flow to it. It just kind of like starts and stops. Like, okay. And it didn't like, I don't know. It felt like it took like some degree of this like skill out. I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for, but it's like the balls go back. And then just like, instead of like having to like time a swing, it's like, okay, well, I'm just going to grab them because that makes more sense, you know, re-aim my shot and then hit them back. I didn't like, so like, you know, this game is really cool. And it has like neat stuff going on, but it just like, it didn't really like grab me that hard with actually playing it and progressing through the dungeons. Like there is some cool, there is neat stuff to find off to the side. There is secret rooms, which will like give you different, tools with different abilities. But I think it was like either, you know, kind of the repetition, like some repetition of like the room designs, or the puzzle designs with kind of a, what felt like a bit of a repetition of the gameplay loop, just gave me kind of like more of like a, okay, feel than like a really enthusiastic one for the game.
Yeah.
But like, it's really cool and I wish I liked it more. So like, it's kind of like either my least, I would say it's like my most enthusiastic try I could possibly give it, because I think it is so cool and different. And it, you know, it looks neat, and it has a neat, like, world to it, and a neat gameplay hook. It just, like, didn't hook me that hard. But the game is, like, only $15, so that's, like, not a huge ask, I think, for something that's as neat and unique as this. And I do think, like, heartily, like, yes, you should try this game. It is so neat. It just, like, didn't grab me enough that I can, like, give it, like, a full-throated buy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, it's a very happy try over here. It's not just like maybe you like it. It's like, no, maybe you like it. I didn't, but I think it's really neat. I think it's so cool.
Oh, Lord. Well, anyway, the third game, last game for you to talk about tonight is called Super Hot, developed
super,
in
Super Hot.
Super.
Super.
Hot.
Hot.
Super. Hot.
That's
super hot.
It's hard to stop doing that.
Super hot.
I was playing it with my kid in the room, and he started doing it, like, immediately. Super. Immediately. Little four-year-old. Super hot. Super hot.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. I could hear my wife in the other room was like, I don't like this game already.
Anyway, Super Hot, developed and published by Super Hot Team, released August 19th on the Switch for $24.99. Blurring the lines between cautious strategy and unbridled mayhem, Super Hot is the first-person shooter in which time only moves when you move. No regenerating health bars, no conveniently placed ammo drops, it's just you, outnumbered and outgunned, grabbing weapons off fallen enemies to shoot, slice, and maneuver through a hurricane of slow-motion bullets. Tim, we all know what Super Hot is. How is it on the Switch?
Man, do we all know? Yeah, so in case somehow you don't know what Super Hot is, man, that game came out 3 years ago. That gave me like a weird sad when I fired it up. I was like, wait, when did Super Hot come out? Like 2016 is when I played this game.
Damn.
Yeah, so yeah, I have played this game before. This is a port review. I did initially play it on Steam, I think. But yeah, the whole premise of, well, the gimmick of Super Hot is that you are placed in these kind of like discrete rooms, and as the copy said, time only moves when you move. It actually, I think it moves like very, very slowly, even if you're not moving, but it moves more significantly when you are moving. But what it lets you do is create like these badass like action movie sequences where there's a guy on the other side of a room, like, shooting a pistol at you, and you could sit there and, like, weave. You could see the bullets coming at you, so you can, like, because time only moves when you move, you can deftly, like, weave around the bullets, dodge the bullets, get up to this guy, punch him so he drops his pistol, grab his pistol out of midair, and then shoot him in the head with it. And then, you know, turn and shoot. It will then take cover from the next bullet and then shoot the next guy that just came into the room. And then there's another guy coming in, but oh, you ran out of ammo. So you throw your gun at that guy to stun him. And then you just beat him to death. That's basically the idea is, and it leans into that, I think, with like the different scenarios where it's like, okay, you're just being, you're in a bar and the guy, or he starts out like in the bathroom of a bar and like you beat up two guys in the bathroom. Then you come out and like the bartender pulls out a shotgun and starts shooting at you. So like, you know, you dodge out of the way, grab like a ball off the pool table, whip it at that guy, jump over the bar, punch him in the face, grab his shotgun, shoot him in the face. And it's so cool. This game is so damn cool.
It's just such a fun power trip.
It is so fun. And it is coming to Switch here. So I think this means it's on literally everything right now. So you have no damn excuse. And it is a great game. It plays runs totally fine on the Switch. I saw no like technical hiccups that was like, oh man, the Switch can't keep up with Super Hot. I was not seeing that. Like it ran nice and smooth. Everything looked good. Just as I remember it on the PC, you know, a few years ago. And, you know, I think you two, also have like motion sickness issues with first person games sometimes. Yes. But that is not something you can have in Super Hot because things only move when you move.
Mm-hmm.
which was like, it's not something I thought about when I took the review, but like when I picked up my Switch and started playing, I was like, oh shit, this game's first person. I hope it doesn't make me throw up. But then it's like, oh, well, wait, it can only move so fast, and it moves to the way I respond. So, like, even if you're a person that has motion sickness issues with first-person games, this is probably a game that you can play because of just, like, how the mechanics of it work. Also unique to the Switch version, you can control this with the gyros.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
You can do that. I wouldn't do that. That's not how I want to play it. Like, I was confused because I didn't realize it was there. So, like, I was playing, like, with my Pro Controller on the couch, and, like, I fidget around when I'm playing games, which is part of the reason why I usually turn this kind of feature off. And, like, all of a sudden, like, my camera would just, like, whip off to the side. I'm like, why is it doing that? I'm not pushing the stick. Is this game, like, messed up? And then I realized, like, oh, wait, like, there are gyro controls. So, like, you can, and it makes me wonder if this might, like, probably not, but it may be a step more towards the VR version of Super Hot, where, you know, that's the VR version. But here, like, you know, you have something tangible where you could move to, like, it leans the view, basically, and turns your head. That's what it does. You still have to move with the, you know, your sticks and push the button to interact. But it's there as an option if you want to try that out.
You can
turn that off. I turned that off. Sorry, that's not my bag. But it's there. I think, you know, some people I'm sure would be interested to check that out. Might make more sense if you're playing with like a Joy-Con in each hand, maybe, or if you're, when you're playing portably, but then you can't see the screen when you tilt it. That's why I never use the gyros when I'm in portable mode. The game, also, which, yeah, I don't know how many people talk about this. It does have a cool, like, story framing device where, like the actual story, like the out of Super Hot world story is presented in like a command prompt, when you're chatting with your friend online. And then like you're running hacks to get into a corporation's like system to play the Super Hot game. But like all the menus of the game of Super Hot are like a file list, like a DOS or command line, like file list thing, which I think is just like a cool, neat touch. Also might confuse some people if they're, cause it's not necessarily forthright with what everything in there is, but like, I think by poking around, people can figure it out. But yeah, Super Hot, ports to Switch just fine, plays great, looks great, has a couple extra bells and whistles to, play around in, and, yeah, Super Hot.
Super Hot. So $25 on Super Hot. What do you think?
Yeah. Speaking of like premium prices for games, I applaud them. This game is still $24.99 on Steam. It's not like a super long game, but like it is high quality. Like the time you get out of this game, like there's no like down moments in this game where it's like, oh, I'm gonna walk around town and get some narrative, or it's just not like, oh, this level kind of, you know, there's this section of the game with this mechanic that sucks. Like, no, like it's awesome. Every level is awesome. It is a high quality package from beginning to end. And again, like it, yeah, it's totally worth it. It was worth it then. It's worth it now. Play Super Hot. It's Super Hot.
Tim, always a pleasure having you on the show, chatting about these games.
Marathon reviews.
It has been a marathon for you. And there's still more show. We still got Pernell and Chris coming up. So do you have any final words before that?
I was going to talk. My final words, I was loading up to talk about the Dreamcast, but then we were opening the show. So, I guess I just can't stress enough. River City Girls, man. I am going to be advocating for that game to people. It's great. Super Hot's great. Creature in the Well is really cool.
All right, moving on. Pernell Vaughn's here. Pernell, how's it going?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself, sir?
I am alive and kicking. I am tired. I am ready to just get this show over and done with, but I have so much more to go.
I feel you on that one, though. Not so much, but the so much to go, because my segment is just me and that go. But unfortunately, I made a bad judgment call, which is going to make this episode feel especially weird. It's not quite a Hot Ones run, but for reasons of absurdness, I ate 20 suicide wings prior to starting this recording.
Oh, no. So,
oh, yes. They were delicious, but my stomach won't agree with that. So,
oh, boy. So midway through the reviews, you're going to be like, all right, I need to take a break.
Oh, no. My goal is to push all the way through. But therein lies the challenge. That is the Hot Ones that SML does. It's not so much the Hot Ones as it is the I don't even know what the name would for it would be, the erupting ones. I got nothing. But ultimately, I should have done this after the recording. But whatever. They were delicious. It was worth it. And now it's hysterical. Also burped.
And now you get to play a very special game.
That's right.
Yeah, it's called Don't Shit Your Pants.
I feel like that's a game that might actually exist out there somewhere.
It does.
Don't shit your pants. Yeah,
there's a Bradley. I want to say a flash game or something called Don't Shit Your Pants, where it's basically a text adventure. No, not a text adventure, but it's a low graphic adventure of not shitting your pants and how to get through that adventure by not shitting your pants.
Don't shit your pants. I hope it has a really cool theme song jingle too.
Though I don't remember. It's been a while.
But it deserves one. If it doesn't have it, someone should write. Get Norg on that. He can
get Norg on it. All right. Let me message him.
Write a theme song for Don't Shit Your Pants. It would sell like gangbusters. You think Conker had it? You ain't seen nothing yet.
Hey, Pernell has a request. You need to do a song called Don't Shit Your Pants.
It's perfect. It's genius. It would embolden my plight in such a way that it'll be immortalized for years to come. That's the guy who didn't shit his pants. He's a legend around here. He did a bunch of game reviews. He's like, whenever I think I'm going to shit my pants from eating too much bad food, I remember him. Purnell's the one. He kept it under control. So too shall I. My father and mother-in-law will have nothing to say about this. No, sir. No embarrassing times for me. That in and of itself will be a weird scenario. Just that could be the legend. What are you known for, Purnell? In your past life, what did you do? I didn't shit in my pants, and everyone heard it around the world. Legendary.
Oh god. But, so what did you wash the wings down with? We always talk about soda. Surely you had something special.
Yes and no. So I didn't drink soda. I had a Wawa iced tea. A quart container, which I've been drinking. No milk or anything. I just went hardcore on them. Though I do have some sodas here, but I bought them in a moment of weakness, says by a guy who just ate 20 suicide wings. But I was like, I'm not going to drink these anytime soon. They're going to be like special treats for me. Like I found a case of the Dark Berry Dr. Pepper, which I guess is getting a... I'm not sure if they're getting a larger press or is this just like a remnant from the Far From Home bit. But I bought a 12-pack of that, and then I bought a 12-pack of the old but new, still kind of new, Orange Vanilla Zero. So
nice.
So I got some goods to last me a bit because I don't drink soda that often. In fact, I gave it up for months but fell back off the wagon, I guess, 2 weekends ago because I needed something to drink at a house that had nothing but soda in it. So I made do because I was thirsty.
Sounds like one my guy house.
Like, oh, yeah. I'm sure someone's like, what about tap water? And I'm like, fuck you. I want tap water. I wanted anything else, especially something caffeinated because it was a late evening. So I was like, there you go. Drink up and go home. So, but even still, even though I decided that I'm not going to just completely say no to soda forever, I'm going to keep the train rolling of very rarely drinking it. So these will make for some nice treats or to mix with liquor at some point.
There you go. I got some weird ones on me tonight.
What you got?
I have a can of Canfield's Diet Chocolate Fudge Soda.
Ooh.
It tastes like a liquefied Tootsie Roll.
So it's good.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's interesting that it's diet chocolate fudge, but whatever.
I haven't drank it. It's been sitting here for a while. I do have one weird soda in my fridge. It is maple bacon soda.
Maple bacon.
Yes, sir. I don't mess around, man. When I go suit, I go for a reason.
True.
Maple bacon.
Hey, chocolate fudge is pretty out there, too.
Oh, it is. I think we're on the same page for this one. And I had cucumber soda too, but I drank that one. And I got to tell you, cucumber soda is actually good. It's good. Huh. It has a weird refreshing taste to it that, believe it or not, I don't feel soda typically has. Soda is more like I drank it, I burped. That was the refreshment, the release of the gas, not the actual typical refreshment that comes from drinking a usually non-carbonated but cold beverage. And yet, cucumber soda gives me that feeling and the belchy feeling. It's just good. It's good stuff.
I'll have to track it down sometime. Right now, I am also enjoying Mountain Dew Voodoo.
That's one I might have to break the creed for, too, because I'm a sucker for, like, limited time flavors, as you can tell from the dark berry purchase.
Yeah, it is mystery flavor as well.
I kind of chuckle at Mountain Dew trying to pull mystery flavor because I could never taste a flavor of theirs. Like, if you gave me Live Wire off without a label, I couldn't tell you it was Live Wire. I genuinely believe that I know what Live Wire tastes like because I associate the label with what I'm drinking. If you put a different flavor in there, or rather, correction, the other way around. If you put a Live Wire in a different bottle, I'm not going to go, what do you know? This is actually Live Wire. I might just go, this is a different Mountain Dew. You know? But I don't know if I could necessarily say this is Live Wire or this is orange. Even more so, I don't think I can say this is orange. Or with Code Red, I don't think I could say this is a cherry Mountain Dew. It's more like this is Mountain Dew, but different. Maybe it's red flavor. There you go. Red flavor Mountain Dew. And this is orange flavor Mountain Dew. And Voodoo would be clear flavor Mountain Dew.
Voodoo is, from what I could tell, it is orange cream.
Huh.
And it is really, really good.
So it's distinct enough from Live Wire in that the cream changes it?
Yes. You could definitely taste the cream. I don't know if they're going with copying Coke and going orange vanilla or if it's orange cream, whatever it is. It's delicious and I love it.
Well, I mean, given that it's Voodoo tied to Halloween, pumpkins, blah, 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 it seems like a pretty logical choice of flavor for a Halloween mystery.
Yeah.
If they went with pumpkin, it would be kind of gross.
Pumpkin Mountain Dew.
And imagine if they went with like witch's milk or something. No, thank you.
God, fucking pumpkin dew. Ugh.
Yeah, that would be nasty.
Ugh.
Do it.
What is wrong with you?
Eye of Newt Dew? Honestly, I'd probably prefer Eye of Newt Dew to pumpkin dew.
Oh, my Lord.
Tongue of frog.
Well, since things are getting plenty weird, should we dive into games? Because you got a lot to talk about tonight.
Frankenstein's nipple dew.
Frankenstein's nipple dew.
Yeah, that could be the flavor. It could be.
That's but almost as crazy as the title of your first review.
You did it.
You ready?
Let's get this party started.
All right. You got four games to talk about tonight. The first one is Utaware Rumono Zan, developed by Aqua Plus, published by NIS America, released September 10th on PS4 for $59.99. Unveil a lost legend in a new light. This action-packed brawler is a reimagination of the story of Haku, a man with no memories and the great conflict that consumes the land he calls home. Purnell, tell us about the game title that I'm not going to repeat because I'm sure I'm wrong with it anyways.
I just call it Uta anyway at this point. I'm terrible with the title, and I've owned two of them for a bit. Of course, they're still shrink wrap because it's me we're talking about, own the first two. So this game, I don't even want to go into the plot because I don't understand it, and I'll explain why in a few minutes. But I can talk about the game itself and then why that, and I think that will be a decent trip for it. So Uta... Because again, I ain't saying that damn title. Whereas the original two games that released on the PlayStation Vita were strategy RPGs, and I admit I was expecting this to be two, it turns out this is actually not that. As you said in your descriptive, it's a reimagining of the first game from the strategy RPG series, but it's done up sort of like a, I want to say Musou game, but it's not as hectic as a Musou game, I guess. It's a little scaled back, but close enough that you can still make the connection. So the way the game works is each stage is broken up into a series of chapters. And on a chapter, you may or may not even have a battle sequence. It might just be a story scene where you just progress through the dialogue and they'll set up story pieces in line with the story of the original game. And you'll see things take place and be introduced to characters, blah, blah, blah. But then sometimes you'll be engaged in an actual battle sequence. And when you get to those, they are typically mission-based. What ends up happening is you get up to four characters, and those four characters make up your battle lineup, your battle team. And when you throw them out into the field together, they all kind of work independently, but you control one at a time. Like, say, for example, there's a woman who rides a giant bird. It's a pretty funny character. And you might be controlling Haku, but the lady on the giant bird is out doing her own thing. But if you want to switch to using her instead, you just push the directional pad that's direction that's associated with that character, and bam, you are now bird lady, and you are kicking ass. You get a light attack button, a heavy attack button, and those two buttons can be used in tandem, not tandem, but in different combinations to perform combo attacks. So, like, say, in, you know, square, square, cross will do, or sort of square, square, triangle will do one attack, blah, blah, blah. And there's also a special attack button where if you either hold down the button, you'll kind of go like a charge up and then a move attack for it, or you can just kind of tap into a special attack. But there's also these like weird resonance effects, which are tied to those specials that I mentioned before, where when you press the button and hold it down or trigger it, there's like a circle that pops up. And the outer circle has an inner circle that comes expands outward to reach the edge. Think like just a typical rhythm game that might do something like that. And if you hit the circle button again, when the circle overlaps the outer layer, it'll happen again and again. And by doing that to a certain, like maybe up to like two or three times, I don't know, I sucked at it, you will get an increased benefit to the actual skill. So it is worth mastering it if you can in order to get better effects. Outside of combat, you can level up your characters in a variety of ways. There are BP points you can get, which can be used to boost a number of stats, like, you know, there's like a strength stat, there's like an attribute stat, and a number of other things that can be used to just kind of make your character stronger, defense and whatever. And you can also boost one of the particular stats that will allow you to equip scrolls, which can be utilized to, you know, like, think of it like equipment in a game, where it could boost your defense or your attack by a certain percentage depending on how strong the equipment item is. Or there might be some other effects like drawing enemies to you or making them avoid you on the field, stuff like that. Now, also, what's weird about this game I noticed, though, is that the way you get equipment is not through the traditional means. Like, there's a lot of games like this, you buy it from a store or you find it in treasure chests or whatever. But in this game, there's a store, but it works sort of like a gacha machine. So you go to the store and you spend the currency that you earn while playing the game proper. You spend, like, say, a small amount to get one pull or a larger amount to get a discounted 10 pulls. And what it does is, like, it will give you items from a specific pool of items it's meant to give you. So, like, let's say there's 12 items you can get. Some are scrolls, some are costumes that the characters can be equipped for, like, a different appearance and what have you. And you pay for 10 pulls. You will get 10 items. Now, each item can be leveled up to level 10 or so. And sometimes the pull will just be the same item you already got, but leveled up. So it might be the scroll of upset stomach, level 1. But if you get another pull of the same scroll, instead of saying got scroll of upset stomach, it'll say scroll of upset stomach leveled up to level 2. Mm-hmm. And it'll get like a stronger effect, like butt wants to, you know, whatever. So you'll be doing a lot of pulls with the intent being to maximize all of the equipment from that particular rank of items. And when you unlock the next tiers, you can do the same with those and get stronger gear, which you can then get gacha pulls for stronger stuff. Now, of course, sometimes the pulls will fail. Typically happens when you're close to maxing out that tier. And what happens is it'll just say, you know, unfortunately, you didn't make it. No reward found, and they'll give you like a small refund on the pull discount or pull cost, which ends up being, it's still like, oh yeah, I just spent like $500 a pull. Yeah, this 400, this 40 coins is going to really make up for that. But it's still just one of the where you'll just beat the crap out of dudes and then eventually get more pulls. Lastly, but not lastly, because there's probably more. There are also sort of, let's call them challenges you can fulfill. So as you play the game, you might, say, rack up some combos. You might, say, use a special attack a certain number of times, acquire a certain amount of money in mass, a total amount. And there's a section of the game where there's like a sort of, I want to say, the Connect Four board that's made up of various metals, like M-E-D-A-L. And each medal can be attained by fulfilling a certain goal while you play the game. Like I'm perhaps like what I just mentioned before. And each time you fulfill one, you will earn the medal for that thing when you go to the medal board to claim it. And that might be, let's say, $5,000 or another costume, so on and so forth. But if you also manage to get a medal for every row or column, or every row or every spot in the row or column, you will get another bonus that the game doesn't tell you about until you actually earn it. So it's sort of like a surprise incentive to beat the tar out of stuff or keep playing through the game to get more rewards. So in addition to the normal missions in the game, like story-wise, there's also free missions that you can unlock. And also you can go back to previous missions that you've already completed and they have like secondary goals that you can attain to get more rewards. So it's incentive to replay stages you've already beat. Now, the positives to this game is that I feel like if you're already into this kind of game, Musou style, large group enemy beat up sessions, I think you'll enjoy this too. I mean, the gameplay is fluid. All the characters that you can acquire feel unique in their own right. So, you know, again, like the bird girl is different from Koan, who's different from Haku, who's different from the really wacky guy who throws fire everywhere. I don't know what the hell his name was, but he's a guy and he throws fire. They all play differently enough that you feel like you're getting different experiences with each character. They'll like make you want to kind of play around with and choose, you know, free flow, choose who you want to play with. The downsides to this, however, two things. One, leading back to what I said at the beginning of the review about, I don't know what the hell the story is going on with, there's a reason for that. And that is the story just seems to kind of get this kind of tossed out there. Like they say certain stuff, but there's no like setup or build up to anything. Remember we were talking about Kill la Kill If a few weeks ago, and I was telling you how sort of like a retelling of that game's original plot or anime's original plot.
Mm-hmm.
And I also mentioned how it's better to wait until you've played or watched Kill la Kill because they assume you know a lot of stuff already. So they'll gloss over a lot of key points and characters or whatever. This game does that too. It just kind of says, Haku's a guy. He's here with these guys. They're fighting in the woods. Like, who the fuck are all these people? Who are any of these people? I have no idea, but I'm fighting with them, and I guess they're cool. They have this whole rapport, but I don't know where it came from because I didn't experience it. Now, I'll admit that this gameplay style probably wouldn't gel too well with copious amounts of visual novel storytelling, even though it does have its fair bit of it anyway. But I think if it had as much as the RPGs had, it might be a turnoff for folks who are coming in with, you know, beat-em-up style action in mind. But what that means to me when I state it is I feel as though the player, if they're coming in with an interest in the actual premise and plot of the game, they're better served coming in after dabbling with the strategy RPG. Like I don't see this as being an alternate way to get into this franchise so much as an alternate way to experience the franchise if you're already a fan of it. So it's definitely something to keep in mind. There are definitely folks who don't really care about the plot and just want to play with different characters and beat the tar out of people. And like I said, the gameplay system is good for that. I found it very enjoyable as I played it. And I enjoyed actually knocking stuff off that bingo board and be like, hey, I nailed this one. I got this cool dark robe for my character. This is nice. Because I like when games reward. It's sort of like how the achievement system works, how I always say, like, I wish achievements gave you tangible in-game rewards for accomplishing. Like we used to get those clothing items for avatars and stuff.
Yeah.
I wish they did stuff like that. And I like when games do that inside their own games, where it's like, hey, if you kill 5,000 enemies, you'll unlock this medal, which unlocks this for you. It just gives you incentive to do stuff you were going to do anyway, or stuff that you could have done, but if there wasn't a reward or a marker in place, you would have just ignored it. It sounds like killing 50,000 guys, but I could, and there's a reward if I do, you know? Like that I can appreciate, and this game has that. I would say the music is good, gameplay is good, graphics are great. It's just that one niggling element. Also, the game does also bank on replaying the stages for like bonus content and the free missions and stuff. So if you're the type of person that's going to just do one each level one time and then walk away from the game, this will be a short run for you. So make sure you come in knowing that you're intended to replay levels and unlock stuff and kind of just really get a feel for the gameplay experience and not just kind of story blitz it and walk away.
Yeah, I don't know. I always feel bad when games have such a focus on replayability and I'm in a hurry to just get through the game.
And that's the funny thing. Like, there's like two separate markets there, I think. Like, it's hard to picture it these days because between the fact that we do reviews, which means we're doing lots of games at a time, there's also that element that's like, hey, they're still out there. It's like, I just want to get a game and I want to be able to play a fair chunk of it. And when you design the idea of replayability, you say you can buy this game knowing that you can keep doing stuff in it. It doesn't end when the story does. And I'm okay with that to an extent. But I also get what you're saying in the sense that, man, I got a lot I want to play. I don't know if I want to replay this again. Though I still believe that the key, best way to do it, though few games do it, is to make a replay feel like a different game, even if it's something that's ridiculous, like withholding certain enemy types and then throwing them at you in the second play. It's like, holy crap, that flaming guy with like a lightsaber wasn't in this game before. He is now. And now he's awesome. He makes the game feel different. Same plot, but the levels feel unique. Or even take every level, but give you an alternate version of each stage. So, yeah, it's the same story, but all the levels are completely new. So, yeah. But fortunately, there's not too many companies that will make that leap, which is unfortunate because I think that will be the key way to make a replay feel like a new play that would entice someone like me to do it.
Yeah. Well, so, overall, $60 on Utaware Rumono Zan. What do you think?
I think if that number is up your alley in regards to what I said earlier, it would be a buy it. Otherwise, try it when the price drops a little.
Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Gun Gun Pixies, developed by Idea Factory, Compile Heart, and Shade Incorporated, published by P-Cube, released September 10th on the Switch for $49.99. A third-person shooter with a twist. Tiny but mighty alien shooters come to save their planet by invading a girl's dormitory. Pernell, I can only assume that this means pervy stuff ahead.
There is some stuff like that, which is funny because people will think I am lying, and that is fine. I'm fine with it. But I did not anticipate that premise when I went for this game. I was like, hey, miniature people in a big world. That sounds cool. I want to play that. It's like perv shit. All right. But let's approach it for how it is and let's see where I go. So you are two pixies, Kame Pon and like Bebon. I can't remember what the heck the pink hair girl's name is, like Bebon or something. And they come from the planet like a weird alien planet, like Pandona or Pandemonia or something like that, where for whatever reason, people are autonomous and that they don't really bond with each other anymore, and they're all kind of isolated, and their civilization is dying. So these two have been sent to Earth to figure out what makes humans different in the way that they can form connections and bonds so that they can take that information back home to save their dying, breeding-free planet. And these two characters are unique because unlike other Pandemonians, they have a strong bond. They've actually bonded outside of the norm, which makes them prime candidates for going in and engaging this mission. So they are zapped down to Earth, and they can only live inside this dorm room because if they leave the dorms, they will die. So if that isn't already an example, an explanation of like the fact that the game completely takes place only in the dorms, there you have it. Now, the way gameplay works is it flows through a series of missions, and each mission will be considered like a story sequence. So say, for example, the first mission is they land and they set up their base in the kitchen. And then there's like various story sequences where like the three current residents will just kind of have a dialogue about, you know, their relationship with each other and just small slice of life stuff that's taking place in their lives. But then for the pixies, these are bigger things that they have to deal with because, again, they're tiny. So let's say, for example, I guess, you know, I'll just use the first stage as an example because it's not too spoiled because it's only the first level. So there's a weird smell in the house. No one knows where it's coming from. And the pixies go, if we don't solve this problem, there'll be a spat within the home and they might all separate because they made it a much bigger problem than it had to be, whatever. So gameplay ends up taking you to a screen where there's three bedrooms set up and you can choose which room you want to go into. Typically, they tell you which one you should go into, so it's not even a question of where, it's just when. So you enter the room, and it ends up becoming like a screen visual of a third-person shooter. So you're small in this giant room, and sometimes the girls are walking around, sometimes they're not, and you are tasked with finding the cause of the smell. You might find leads that take you to leave the room and go to other rooms to communicate and learn more information to eventually find smell and clear the mission. How do you find information? Here's where the nitty-gritty happens. So The Pixies have guns. These guns are loaded with happy bullets. What are happy bullets? Fuck if I know. But what they do is you use them like a gun to fire at the girls in various places, be it their legs, their head, their tits, or their asses. And when you shoot them enough, it'll trigger a response. Typically some sort of like, I guess, a euphoric sensation. And then they kind of say something relevant that's informative. I don't know why it triggers a specific release of information, but that's what it does. So you'll find the girls walking around the room sometimes, and what you'll be doing with the gun is you'll be shooting at them from sniper vantage points, and I'll get into why in a second, until you've maxed those values up, and they'll tell you information while also hoping that they don't see you. Because if they do see you and their sense gauge goes up, the game is over. So what sniper points that I mentioned before was this. So normal gunshots do a certain amount of damage, but when you're shooting at the girls, ain't but so much. But if you stand at a sniper vantage point, which are these circles that are strewn throughout the rooms, they will not only allow you to heal lost damage, but you'll also get a much stronger gunshot, which will be makes it the key point to shoot from. So you'll be looking for those specifically with the intent to shoot the girls from those zones. Now, eventually, at a certain point in the game, you'll also come across a certain set of nuisances called, actually, I don't know what the hell they're called. They're just squid people. And they're basically little octopi people with condoms on their heads. I don't know why they have condoms on their heads, but they have condoms. They're just annoying little bastards. They kind of swim around. They sometimes swing their tentacles at you. They have various attacks depending on when they introduce different ones as you further go into the game. And when you see them, you pretty much have to shoot and kill them. They're more so nuisances than anything else. They never really pose a real threat. They're just kind of there to impose a problem. Now, the meat and potatoes of the game is the final boss battles on each mission. So these girls have problems, normal problems to us, but the game goes well above and beyond to exaggerate those problems into things that just seem really, really weird. So again, I'm only going to use the first level, though I almost want to use the second because the boss of the second level had me in stitches, like literal stitches. But the first level's boss, quote unquote, is a girl who feels as though she's getting too fat. And she decides she doesn't want to eat anymore. So she doesn't want to eat and she's going to exercise, which is dangerous because if you exercise without eating, you could die. Whatever. The Pixies think anyway. So they go into action to stop her from working out by shooting her up with happy bullets. Now, as she is exercising on the floor, you are being attacked by her mood auras. It's a weird freaking thing. Yes. So mood auras come in a variety of different states. You have these giant purple orbs that hit the floor and roll after you. And if they hit you, you take damage. There are stars. I guess they're called like sparkle sparkles, where they kind of fly up in the air. They go on like a weird like spin formation. They shoot at you like comets. And then there's other ones like splashy splashy, which seems like they kind of work like water. They just kind of splash everywhere. And it gets to be pretty freaking chaotic. You're dashing, you're running, you're dodging, you're just dipping and ducking to try to avoid getting hit by this stuff while also looking for vantage points to shoot the girls and get their endorphins up. Because even though they don't outright state it, you are definitely giving them orgasms by shooting them enough to calm them down. Because if that is not what they're implying, I call BS to them staying alive like that. They say, like, endorphins increasing, endorphin rush, and their faces are clearly Agehow faces, if I'm pronouncing that right. And it's just freaking hysterical. I'm like, yeah, this is totally innocent. Oh, my God. Also, I think it's funny that the way they try to skirt a slight bit of the perviness in the normal sense is that rather than put a male protagonist in the game, they use two women protagonist pixies, but one of them is a lesbian. So she's doing all the stuff that a guy would do, but it's different because a lesbian pixie. So it's okay.
I love it.
It's freaking hilarious. And I didn't get to the whole most hilarious part. So again, one of the pixies is like all business and the other pixie is like pervish and stuff. So it always ends up being funny how at the end of every chapter mission, it ends what's called the purification level, where one of the key girls in that story decides to take a bath. And the pervy girl always manages to convince the other one to go with her to the bathroom while the girl is bathing. So this works as sort of a bonus round where, as the girl is bathing, you're running around the bathtub before the time runs out, shooting bullets at her just to get her happy or something. And every once in a while, these rings will pop up on the side of the tub. And when they do, you press the button on them to make the pixie jump onto the girl and cling to her and, I guess, gyrate on her or something, because you just have to twirl the stick and money just starts bop, 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 bopping. And it's just funny because, of course, they put the soap in all the right places and whatever.
But always. The soap's always in the right places.
Pretty much. At this one day, it's going to just say, screw it. We know we're servicing here. Just have a code. Take all that stuff off. But basically, this is the way you end up earning the majority of your money. Some of the money can be found running around the actual rooms, and sometimes it can be given as a bonus for, like, beating missions. But most of it is going to come from this purification stage. What does money do? Well, in between levels, you're able to go back to they call it Dex, though I have no idea why. And you can purchase upgrades for the girls. There's not a ton of upgrades in this game. It's more like there's different guns. So there's typically a gun that fires three bullets and one gun that just fires one concentrated shot for both types of girls' guns. So even though one has an assault rifle and one has a pistol, my experience, those guns themselves didn't perform very differently. It was just the two gun type upgrades you can get that perform differently. But you can buy those. You can buy, magazines, which allows you to hold more bullets at a time. Because when you run out of bullets on the map, you have to run around and look for, like, refill items that allow you to recharge your arms. In addition to that, you can buy new underwear. Because, yeah, of course you can. Whenever you crawl around the floor, you can see the drawers. And, of course, they take more damage. Their clothes rip off, so you can still see the drawers. Also, you can buy costumes that go above the drawers or underwear. So, might be, I don't know, like a waitress or a caviar walking fish person or something. I don't know. Just weird costumes you can buy when you unlock them and have the money with which to purchase them. So, honestly, the game itself is fun. I enjoy playing it, but it does have some issues that I think are worth noting for folks to understand before they decide they want to dive into this or not. So, one thing is probably just as a factor of how the game itself is in the premise. So, you're always in the different girls' rooms. So, early on in the game, it's just the first three girls. So you're going to go into there, and two of the girls share a bedroom. So technically, there's only two rooms. So you end up going back and forth between the rooms a lot. And since it is a bedroom, the layout doesn't actually change. Just the furniture is going to be in the place it's always been for that girl's room because it's her freaking room. So over time, you're going to be like, well, I've seen this room. I know the layout backwards and forwards. And you might find yourself being like, man, I want a different change of scenery. I'm tired of running around this girl's room looking for freaking dirty Kleenexes and shit. But you will be doing that for a little while. And it ends up being the things that liven up being like the actual boss battles that I mentioned before and how ridiculous they get. That's what ends up livening up all the stuff. Secondly, if you're coming into this game with an intent being focus solely on the gunplay, who cares about the girls that you're dealing with, you're coming at it with the wrong attitude, because there's a fair amount of dialogue in between the different stages, because they actually want you to care about the characters themselves, or at least take an interest in them. So you're going to be seeing them go to the mall shopping for clothing. You're going to be seeing them baking pieces. You'll be seeing them having conversations, and that's going to be something to work with. That's not a detriment. That's just a thing that exists and is worth stating for the game itself. Eventually, other girls will show up at the apartment or at they call it lily pad, but other girls will show up. And when they show up, they might take a residence there. And when they show up and take residence, that ends up becoming a new room to explore, because that girl decorates her room differently. And that allows you to get some new digs with which to explore. But one downside to that is that this is a personal Purnell, is that the music doesn't freaking change. That same damn beat every time, and it got old for me real fast. I turned the music down eventually. I think that's like a Purnell exclusive thing. I'm always like, I gotta mention how the music is.
No, but, Chris always mentions the music too.
Oh, I'm glad. See, Chris is all right, man. He's a good guy. But yeah, like it ended up having me wanting to turn the music down for those sequences. And once I got tired of it, and once I had a flavor for it again, I turned it back up. The most heinous issue, though, and definitely what I need to point out, though, is the camera's bad. So in the case of this game, think of it as like Lackey 2 actually flying around you. So a lot of games, cameras will function the way where they adapt to the environment that you're in. So if you're in a small corner, the camera will just assume there's no wall there, so it can back up and just show you behind the wall. If you need to spin the camera around, it can do that. But in this game, again, it's almost like a physical embodiment of a camera hovering around your character. So when you end up running behind like a dresser, depending on how you enter that area, the camera will just be a pain in the ass, and you'll find yourself just kind of assuming where you're going because you can't turn the camera in a way that makes it easy to see where you're going. And if you go to the edge of a corner, say there's a dresser in the corner of a room, and you cut from left, you go down to back and then run down the side of it, the camera does not adjust. You're just in a claustrophobic space just struggling to get the camera in check, or at least get out of that area so you can get back into an open environment and the camera will start tracking properly. I have no idea how they managed to pull that off in such a way, but it was irksome, and I honestly never got used to it. It never stopped being annoying to me. Like, just because it doesn't make sense for that to even be the case. I do remember, once I looked into it, that it was originally a Vita game, so maybe that's partly why it's like that. It's based off of a game from, like, I'm not even sure when Pixies came. I think it was 2016 or 17 in Japan. Hmm. But that might be why the camera's carrying those old issues. But it's definitely something to point out because it is an annoying thing. But again, it only really factors in, well, two ways. One, when you're in like tight spaces. And two, every once in a while, you will find yourself, say, walking along narrow spaces, like say the door trim at a house, you know a door trim is, right? Like that extra bit of wood. Yeah. You might be running along that or along a curtain rod against the wall. And that, with the how I described the camera, could also be a factor of weird camera junk where it's like trying to bump up and it can't quite get right where you are. So you're fighting the camera as you're trying to make a precarious jump from a curtain rod to a door frame. But it's just stuff you just put up with if you're enjoying the game. So it also admittedly makes some of the freaking sniper points useless, because if I'm actually going to a sniper point that's up against a wall, well, good luck getting the camera to pan behind you so that you can zoom in and start shooting. It never works for me. I don't know if I'm forgetting something. If the company's listening, might go, yeah, you know, there's a first person button that negates that weird camera thing you're talking about. But I didn't notice it, and it was irksome when I was trying to deal with it. But what I will say is that I wanted to make sure I got those grievances out so people could be informed. But the game as a whole, to me, I like the atmosphere that they created for the different rooms. I like exploring them. I wish the squid people were a little bit more of a nuisance, and I wish they actually had more variety in what they did. But I found the game enjoyable. And eventually they do make it easier for you to traverse the rooms by giving you a grappling hook item. So eventually you won't have to worry about certain ways of like climbing up, ascending different levels of the rooms. Because aside from jumping up and down a lot, there are also, like, funny enough, land ports that work as warp gates to take you to different places in the room sometimes. You can utilize those to get from the lower level to the upper levels. But for the most part, I mean, I enjoyed playing the game, and I like coming across the ridiculous scenarios that they were painting and making you deal with, like how when they learn about what a cockroach is. That was fun. I just wish you could actually fight the cockroaches. Just a thought, guys. Put cockroaches in games where you're a tiny person in a house.
Yes, it just cockroach makes battles sense. Must be there.
Yes. I don't know why they negated that, but they should have put them in here. But yeah, it's honestly a genuinely funny game. I like playing it. I enjoyed it. It's just I wish that you could go outside. I wish you were able to fight in the kitchen instead of just the three rooms. It has those faults to it. But overall, I'm coming into it with that in mind, knowing I think it's easier to accept that this game is about wacky pixie people shooting girls and then shooting them again, but only naked in the tub.
Oh, Lord. Well, $50 on it. What do you say?
I think it's a genuine try, but if you're a fan of games like Mo Chronicles, which for the record, I still hold the perv title by far. Though, yeah, by far, even over the game I reviewed recently, the Omega Lair, I still think Mo Chronicles holds it. It does, because I felt weirder. I take that back. No, I forgot you can water the gardens with their jizz. No, you did. Omega is the top rank. Anyway, the point is, if you're a fan of those games, then this becomes a genuine buy it. But otherwise, tread lightly and try it.
Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Wilmot's Warehouse, developed by Hollow Ponds, published by Finji, released August 29th on Switch and Steam for $14.99. Wilmot's Warehouse is a puzzle game about keeping a warehouse running in tip-top shape. Just remember where you put everything, because when the service hatch opens, you'll need to find things people want quickly in order to earn the coveted performance stars. Pernell, does this have 3-star ratings?
Oh, God. Oh my God. No, it doesn't. But this game, when I come on this show and I do reviews, there's always the games I just know I want. Like, give me that game. It's obviously fun. I just want to review it and tell people it's fun. But then there's games where I don't know what the hell they are and what they were thinking when they released it, but I want to know. And since I can get it for free, I ask for a review and I discover something. And that discovery is that the game is actually freaking amazing to play. And if I had known this prior, I would have bought it. And I actually am buying it for the Switch because I really, really like this game. This is genuine quality in a way that I wouldn't have expected from a game where you're a square pushing squares. So what is Wilmot's Warehouse? Literally what it is. You're a guy named Wilmot. It's actually not your warehouse, but you work in it. And your job is to stock the warehouse and deliver goods to customers based on what they want. That's the entire game. But it is what makes this game play that truly makes it sing. This game particularly speaks to folks who have a penchant for wanting to organize and manage inventories, not just in games, but even in their homes or in their cars or any freaking where, really. And as a guy who has junk all over the freaking place in his home, it still appealed to me. You start the game off with a big warehouse, and there's a bunch of like pillars strewn about in different corners. They just kind of impede your progress. Now, every day, a delivery truck will show up delivering a bunch of items. Each item is represented by a square, a tiny square about the size of Wilmot. You have to use the character to walk up to those items, pick them up, and place them throughout the warehouse in a way that best makes sense to you. Because when it's showtime, you will have a certain amount of time to deliver goods to customers based on what they want at the top of the warehouse. Like, say, for example, I want some skis and I want some mittens. You have to go to the warehouse, find the skis, the mittens, and take them up to the guy either all at once or individually. It doesn't matter. Except it does matter, because you want to do all this as fast as possible in order to actually finish and clock out. And when you clock out, depending on how fast you did everything, you'll earn performance stars. What are those? I'll get to that in a second. After you perform each set of deliveries, a new truck shipment will show up, a timer will start to tick down, and you have typically about 2.5 to 3 minutes to take all the stuff off the truck and organize it as best as possible, as well as with everything else that's already in your warehouse. And then a new day of deliveries begins. That is the flow for 3 rounds. After the 3rd round, you are allowed to spend performance stars on various upgrades for Wilmot. You might want to give him a boost of a dash, or the ability to rotate blocks, or to make him stronger enough to carry more things at one time. You might want to expand the warehouse by removing some of those pesky pillars I was telling you about. And then the best of the best things happened. And it doesn't sound like it is, but it is. You are allowed to organize the warehouse without a clock. You just walk around and you try to figure out where things need to go. And the game intentionally screws with you, too. You might think, well, yeah, at first it's simple. It was like, okay, here's a bunch of blue, light blue stuff. Clearly, all of it seems to be related to winter, like skis and hats and mittens. I'm going to have a winter department. I'll start all over there. However, there are 200 things in this game total that slowly unlock as you progress through the game. And eventually it starts to get really wacky. Like, you'll see something that seems like it could be summery, because it is orange, but then you'll get another thing that is also orange, but it's clearly not summery. So now, do you want to group them all as all the orange items, or do you want to have all the summer items and then take the other orange thing and put it somewhere else? And it gets stranger and stranger. Like, eventually you start getting symbols like a moon or a square that's a square. And you're like, what the hell do I do with this? Do I just have the shape department? I don't freaking know. I got to figure this out. I got to put it in. And it ticks with you. It has you going nuts, but in a relaxing way to just find the perfect way to organize your own personal warehouse. and it feels really, really good. Really good. It's just something that I would have never expected to want from a game. One thing I described, a friend of mine was asking me about it earlier because I was like, this game, I can't wait to talk. He's like, how would he message me personally? I said, what is this game and how would you describe it? And I was like, I don't know. I don't think a game exists that plays like this. And then I had the dumbest descriptive. I said, remember Resident Evil 4 when you were finding items and Leon had to put it all on that one grid of squares?
Yeah.
And you had to rotate and place stuff in a way to let you carry as much as you could throughout the game? This is that, except instead of carrying it around the board, you're just storing it so you can know where it is later to give to people. And they also make it so that you can't see items until you walk up against them. So it's just like if you were in an actual warehouse. You can't see what's in the box until you're up at the box and you're like, oh, this is the cookingware. Got it. So you have to kind of know where you put stuff so that you can walk up to it and pick it up. And you might find yourself on more than a few occasions running up to a thing that you thought was something, but is actually something else because you replaced it three turns ago and you forgot. Again, this sounds like a game that I'm sure it's probably that one person listening is like, what the hell are you talking about? It doesn't sound like fun at all. That sounds stupid. And I'm telling you, don't knock it till you've tried it. This is the kind of game that I want to see developers putting out. Stuff that you don't expect to like, but is actually really cool. Though the downside to this kind of game is that a lot of times people will ignore it until they hear differently that it's good. Like, I took the fall for you to tell you this is legit. Don't fall for the fact that it's a minimalist looking game. It's fantastic. You can even earn like posters that your boss will put up on the walls that are like inspirational posters, like get in there and hang in there, kitty, or lift with your legs, not with your back. it's just like weird, dumb stuff that I love. And the OST is superb. It's freaking wonderful. How wonderful is it? I'm doing a Rhythm and Pixels episode next week, actually. I came up with the whole theme because of it, called Get Organized, Stupid.
That's beautiful.
And there will be a track from this game on that episode. It's a lot of the OST is like variations of the same track, but the way it's done, it's not a bother. It just feels good to hear. It's like that kind of track you can just put over working. Like I was playing it at work today, just listening to the music at work. Like it's a good tune, like set of tunes to listen to while you're doing other stuff. And in the case of the game proper, the other stuff is fixing your damn warehouse. So it's a perfect track to listen to, or a set of tracks to listen to while you're taking care of business at work in a game.
Nice.
I love this game.
It sounds like you really enjoyed it.
I really did.
Well, then $15 on it. What's your verdict?
Deny it.
All right, moving on.
No, definitely buy it.
Yeah, sounds really, really cool. I hope it comes to more platforms in the future. I know Tim Ekibis was asking about it as well after we recorded his stuff earlier. He was curious about it, so he'll be excited to hear that it's a good one.
Yeah, buddy. And hopefully he hears this to know, because you got to go in with that preface of knowing this is what you're getting into, but it's worth getting into. It just feels wonderful.
Nice. Well, you got one last game to talk about. That is called Little Racer, developed and published by All In Games, released August 29th on the Switch for $15.99. Little Racer is a dynamic racing game and a great adventure harking back to your childhood. Enjoy various tracks, avoid obstacles, and speed for the win. Take the wheel, choose a kart, and start the wild ride. Purnell, tell us about Little Racer.
Little Racer is another game that was not what I was expecting it to be. So when I requested Little Racer, what I was expecting it to be was sort of like Super Off-Road, where tiny cars on the track and you're dodging stuff or whatever. And while that stuff is true, the way the game plays is completely unlike that. Remember those old cars that you used to have as a kid, those electric racetracks where you just push the button and the car would just shoot around the track? Mm-hmm. And if you just held it down too long and the thing wasn't built safely, the car could launch off the track.
Oh, yeah.
That is literally what this game is. There are about 30 courses, and on each course, the way it's set up is that you are trying to get first place. It can be a number of weird situations, like a loop-de-loop or different obstacles, but there are only really two things you can do. You can A, hit the accelerator to speed up or slow down, and you can hit the other trigger button to let you jump track. So as you're moving on the course, you're trying to keep speed to beat the other racers for five laps. But every once in a while, they'll see debris on the road that you want to be on the you want to change lanes to avoid the debris. Or it might be some scenarios where, like, it might be a timed obstacle, like, say, like a chicken that crossed the road or a bridge or something, where you need to make sure that you cross it just as the chicken's gone or the bridge is down, so that you can actually get over it. So you're trying to time your racing to not only dodge those obstacles, but also not to careen off the crack, off the track, rather. You'll unlock more tracks by playing through the single-player game and unlocking them. So say you beat one level, you unlock the next one. And after a certain number of times, you'll start getting different requests, like get first place in this track to unlock this track. And also, you'll get new cars the further you progress in the games. Like, you just beat a few tracks, you'll get a car. I'm not sure if it's dependent on if you place first on the other tracks or not. I just know I was beating stages, and it was like, here's a new car. I was like, thank you. So I feel like this game would sing the best in a multiplayer fashion, though, because I could picture four friends sitting around a table hitting the gas and trying to keep their cars from careening, better if they're drunk, of course, and they're trying to avoid careening their cars on the track, but they're also a little bit too inebriated to know, have that fine level of finesse. So it's like, oh shit, no, I can't slow down. So you have, like, the grandma drivers on one half of the room and, like, the speed devils on the other half of the room, all trying to beat each other. There's something enjoyable about that, and I like the fact that it's not a complicated game. I can describe the game to a person in three sentences about how to play it, and I think it does a good job of providing me with a fun time while I'm engaging in this. And it actually kind of takes me back to a bit of a nostalgic period, because, like I said, I used to have one of the electric car tracks, and when I realized that was how the game played, I was like, oh, I remember this now. And, of course, I also picture Homer Simpson sitting on the floor in his underwear playing with the car track on Sunday morning. So it was just... All in all, it hit the right notes for me. I think the game is enjoyable. I think it does what it does well, or I think it does what it wants to do well. I like the diminutive graphics. They're not minimalist. They're just tiny. Everything's tiny and colorful and playful. It's good. I think it's fun.
Well, then for $16, what do you say?
I think it's a buy it game.
Really?
Actually, you're right. Maybe I should say try it, because I think it's a buy it game, but the appeal definitely stems from the whole, can you appreciate the electric cars vibe? That is a major component, because there are definitely people that are like, I need more control over my car. And that's not a bad criticism, but that's not what this game is gunning for. So maybe I'll bring it to a try it with a strong buy it if the nostalgia element I just spoke to sold you.
Yeah, it would speak to me. My uncle used to have the racetracks down in my grandmother's basement, and we used to just love playing with them. Me and my brother used to go down there all the time and ask him to race cars, and I'm interested in this one. It looks really cute.
And it makes you think, this goes back to something I said earlier. Can you think of a game prior to this that played exactly in this way? I can't.
There's a game on Xbox One called, God, what the hell's the name of it? The European name was like Skelectrics or something like that. It's literally the same style of game of where you're just using the trigger on the Xbox controller to determine how fast you're going. It plays exactly like those cars used to play, with the trigger controls and, you know, holding it down certain amounts to go around turns without flying off the track. So there's not many of them, but there are games like this out there. It just sounds like this one's a lot better than that one.
Oh, yeah. In that case, get on board and let me know what you think.
Awesome. Well, Purnell, it is always a pleasure having you on the show, chatting about these games. Do you have any final thoughts before we move on to Chris?
I sure do. I didn't shit my pants.
All right. And finally tonight, we've got our good friend Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how's it going?
Hey, doing all right.
How was your weekend?
Oh, pretty good. It's more Skyrim and played a show, which was fun.
Ooh.
And yeah, just all kinds of busy. Not enough sleep.
I know the feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, but good stuff. How's the Skyrim going? What's the, are you still on the completionist?
Yeah, still on the completionist build, and still also working on a level 1 playthrough, which is starting to become more interesting. So I'm kind of like, maybe I can just skip it and go to that one, but, you know, thinking about, you know, finishing one, then the other, and then moving on to different games, so.
What? A different game?
I know. well, you know, I do have that PlayStation 4. I have plenty of games for it. I just bought another one, actually, and it's another first-person RPG sandbox.
Which one?
Kingdom Come Deliverance.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I hear that one's even more fussy.
Yeah, I think you're going to enjoy that one.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Cell phones.
Gotta love them.
Yeah.
Anyway, should we chat games?
Yes. Let's talk about some video games, what I played this weekend and are reviewing now.
We got three to chat about. The first one is called Hymno, developed by David Moralejo Sanchez, and Grab the Games, published by Rattleika Games. It released September 3rd on PS4 and Vita, 4th on Xbox One, 6th on the Switch for $4.99. Hymno is a non-violent, no-death platformer. Use wall jumps, slides, and dashes to reach new heights in randomly generated maps. Chris, tell us about Hymno.
All right, Hymno. Well, interestingly, it's kind of like this game made me very philosophical, because as I started a new game, one of the first things that happened is I landed in some water, and that took me to like this different place, and I was like, oh, okay, so this game really doesn't have death. Even jumping into the water takes you somewhere different. And so I jumped into the water again, and it took me back to the title screen. So it's not death, but okay, so Hymno is a really odd duck, to be honest with you. So you play a character who has a big sword on his back and no way to use it. There's no button that accesses this sword. So already I'm confused. So the game purports to be a peaceful, no death kind of thing. It just kind of drops you into this level with the controls kind of in a static location right as you start. And it's very simple controls. It's basically, jump, slide, dash in the air. And then of course you got your wall jump. No double jump though, which I'm like, what, how is this a modern platformer if you can't double jump? Only a single jump.
Yeah. For real.
But anyways, so you drop into this world and you start to jump on platforms. There's no enemies. There are things that you can collect. And I had to look it up because the game offers you no story or direction. So I actually looked up what are the power-ups, and they make you gain levels. And so the power-ups are experience points. They make you gain levels. And as you gain levels, if you run across something that says like level 3, whatever, and you're in level 3, then it will make a thing float around you. What does that thing do? Nothing. It floats around you and looks neat. Then, you know, you can collect more of those things if you like, but the whole point of it is to just find the exit to the level. Since the levels are randomly generated, that can either be easy or difficult depending on what. Sometimes, yeah, like you'll get dropped and like the only place you can really get to is like requires a jump, slide, wall jump, slide, and then jump. And then, you know, you're on the next platform, maybe.
Yeah.
More often than not, I just ended up back in the water and starting the game over. I looked into it and the game has no end. So you just keep doing this until you're done doing it. There's no actual goal. There are no enemies or conflicts. It's kind of like, you know, my feeling about the game is that it's basically the guy with the sword on his back and no way to use it. It feels like it's almost there as a game, but it kind of felt more like a demo of what the person can program, you know?
Yeah.
Like I understand sometimes these things, platformers end up being like, you know, a little bit of a different take on things, but I kind of don't understand where this game is going. And apparently I've seen all of it. It randomizes the levels and you just keep going, and they don't, I don't think they scale up in difficulty or anything. They just kind of leave that to the dice rolls.
Yeah. I haven't noticed any kind of difficulty scaling either. I made it through, I don't know how many levels. I kept going and going. I ended up getting all the achievements in the game, which that, you know, it says Rad Lake on there. So this is going to be one of those games where people pick it up with easy achievements and trophies in mind. And I can confirm this is another easy one.
Oh, okay. But,
yeah. So that's probably one of the big selling points is that it's going to be easy achievements for some people.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's something I don't look for in games. So yeah. I can see then why, yeah, that's a goal I didn't even think about. It's like, oh, okay, there's achievements to kind of help me figure out what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, ultimately, you know, they say it's a peaceful game. They're like, it has peaceful ambient music. I was like, this music kind of sounds like sinister Stranger Things stuff. Like, it's, you know, it's 80 synth, and it's just being played very, very slowly. I feel like it's a soundtrack that, like, you would want to speed up like twice and then you'll hear some recognizable song or something like how Inception is.
Yeah.
But, I mean, no, it was fine. It has a je ne sais quoi to it. It has a certain thing that like you actually do kind of like, oh yeah, I actually think this is pretty cool. But, it's kind of like once you snap back and realize, well, this is all I'm doing and I could be doing other things, then that might be more your speed.
Yeah, well, overall, $5 on it, what do you say?
Well, $5, I would say just know what you're getting into. Like I said, there's no conflict, and, you know, this is the kind of game, like, it ran so smoothly, and, like, the jumps were so, like, nice. Like, it really felt good to play, so I'm kind of like, you know, this game actually could do with a few enemies. I'd like to see how the same person can handle combat. So, yeah, that's. I would say it's a try it. Basically,
I agree with you, and achievement fans are going to buy this up. So.
Yeah, achievement fans, go for it, because, yeah, you'll get your trophies.
Yeah.
$5 here for a trophy.
Yeah, that's what people, that's what they love, easy achievements.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And you got to get that platinum trophy on PlayStation.
Oh, yeah. So, speaking of combat, there's just been this, like, epic battle between my girlfriend and the cat going on in the background.
Do tell.
I mean, I think you can hear it all. It's a bunch of crashing and spray bottling and then cell phone going off.
I thought we would get more details on what started it. And
oh, I don't know. I was watching the screen.
If there's any blood.
No, none that I know of. I guess we'll find out.
In due time. But yes. Next game to talk about is called Deadlings, developed by Artifex Mundi, published by All In Games. It released August 27th on the Switch for $7.99. Death is lonely. He has zero friends on his Face Tome account and no one to hang out with. So in order to feel better, he begins Project Deadlings. Chris, what is Deadlings?
All right, Deadlings. So this is a, I guess you could call it a single room puzzle platformer. Which, you know, we've covered a few times, but this one has a little bit of a twist, and I actually quite like the twist. So you basically have a for every level, and, you know, you just choose the levels on a grid of levels, you know, and you have a certain amount of certain types of zombies that you can send into the level, whereupon they begin an auto runner routine that you can interact with in different ways. So it's kind of like an auto runner as well as a puzzle platformer. Okay, so you've got your running zombie, which you'll recognize immediately as the running and jumping kind of thing. That's, you know, your very basic essence of auto runners. But then you've got the zombie who is sticky, and he moves a little slower, but he sticks to walls and will automatically turn corners, and so this one can make it, you know, vertically. But, you know, you can't jump, you can't really jump over things because you don't have a whole lot of speed, so it really is best suited for certain obstacles and not others. There's a theme there. And then a few levels in, like, you basically start out with just those two for a few levels, and then they introduce in two more. One is possibly my favorite. It's a zombie who just uses farts as a jetpack infinitely.
Nice.
So you basically turn on the gas, as it were, and float up. Yeah, float up to collect everything and push buttons and stuff. The goal of the levels, of course, is to gather up brains, which are calculated into your score. If you get all the brains, you get an achievement, and there's three possible achievements, one for, getting through the level, one for getting all the brains, and one for doing it in a short amount of time, which, of course, choosing the right zombie for the job is going to be, paramount for all three of those things. So then there's a fourth kind of zombie called Lazy Brains, who is a slow-moving zombie who you can actually stop. That is to say, those are for, laser beam timer things, stopping and going and everything like that. So these are all three, all four, really, different auto-runner physics, and you actually do get to throw them all into the same level. So, like I said, you choose your entrance, and then you choose your zombie, and then you choose which direction they're going to run in, because you cannot change directions once they start, except for the fart jetpack zombie, I believe. I think you can control him just fine. But so you basically, you'll start with a running zombie going to the left, and if that zombie hits a wall, it will die. So that's, it'll die again. And then, you have maybe one or two more, and then you can send it in the other direction, and then you can send your sticky zombie up towards the top, things like that. The levels get pretty big and elaborate, which, of course, I enjoy. They get very difficult very quickly. So this is definitely a game where the first five levels you'll probably be fine, and then after that you're going to start really racking your brains on how to get through the thing.
You really kill me with these.
You basically get to enjoy nice, colorful, cartoony graphics. Of course, nice, big, giblety, bloody deaths constantly, and a really nice funky soundtrack. So this game's it's a lot of fun, and I really like that it incorporates all these things into one big mess, instead of doing one thing over and over again. You're actually getting to chart your course. It kind of reminded me of Lemmings in that way, oddly enough. It's a little bit Lost Vikings, a little bit Lemmings, in that kind of tradition of just really clever puzzle making. The one complaint that I do have about this game is that it has no pro controller support.
None.
Literally, it puts the circle with the line through it and grays it out, and you can only use Joy-Cons on this game, which fine for most people, but when I play it on a TV, I do like to have my pro controller.
For real. That's the only thing I use on the TV.
Yeah, I think part of it has to do with the fact that it's it maps. Okay, so it has a touchscreen, which is meant to convey what the original Steam release looked like. And that is to say, you click on the door to start sending your zombies out. You choose your zombie with the mouse by hitting an arrow, and then with another arrow, you choose the direction. Well, they have it mapped out to the A button and the shoulder buttons, which actually gets really confusing. I more often than not suffer deaths through accidentally sending out the wrong zombie. Just through not being able to get my fingers to figure it out. That might be more of a personal problem than anything. But like I said, you can do that with the touchscreen and be just fine. But since they have it mapped out to controllers, I don't really get why they don't have pro controller support. Suffice to say, I played this game mostly in handheld mode with the touchscreen rather than messing with anything else. It's a small complaint, and it doesn't take away from the game at all. It's just, that's something to be wary of, is that if you put this in your dock and get your pro controller out, you're going to be doing something else.
All right. Well, overall, $8 on it. What do you say?
$8. I think it's actually worth it. There's a lot of levels. There's I think 60 plus about another 10 bonus levels or something like that. The difficulty, like I said, goes way up. It gets really elaborate. I think fans of things like Lemmings and such would enjoy it. It definitely has the frustrating difficulty of an auto runner, but in that kind of cool way where when you finally actually do it, then you're happy about it.
Yeah.
I think it's a really good, mix of ideas that I think is executed pretty well, especially for the price. So I say go ahead and get this one.
Awesome. Final game to talk about tonight is called Atomic Heist, developed by Live Aliens, published by Dragius Games, releasing September 13th on the Switch for $7.99. Sci-fi roguelike twin-stick shooter. The nuclear core you have to steal is leaking radiation. Fight your way out of the space station in your combat ship and pull off the Atomic Heist. Chris, tell us about Atomic Heist.
Okay, so, wait, did you say nuclear?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That might be a regional thing. I say nuclear.
Yeah, I know. It's just regional. It's stupid. No, I catch myself most of the time. Normally, we make fun of Cole for how she says things, but...
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'll take one for the team.
It's funny because, you know, we had President George W. Bush who would say nuclear, and people made fun of him for it.
Yeah.
But I'm like... Yeah, but he purports to be from Texas, and we say nuclear over here, so that might be the disconnect there. But I found, yeah, that people actually do say nuclear, and there's nothing in the spelling that says it can't be pronounced that way. So, yeah. I just think that's interesting. Okay, Atomic Heist. So, this is...
Too bad Cole wasn't here. She'd be having a blast right now.
All right, exactly. Oh, a blast. Nuclear blast. I'll show myself out.
Atomic Heist.
Atomic Heist is another interesting mishmash of ideas, actually. So this one, when I looked at it at first, I was like, oh, hell yeah, it's a twin stick shooter. That's akin to shmups, which is one of my favorite genres. And so I was like, well, of course I want to play this. Twin stick shooters, I actually haven't reviewed those too much. I did Neon Chrome and Riddled Corpses, and I mentioned Neon Chrome because it actually reminded me a little bit of Neon Chrome in that it is a game where, you know, it's a roguelike. So as soon as you start in a stage, like, it's going to have a different layout every time. There's going to be enemies pursuing you relentlessly, and you have to shoot them with the available ammo. Now, available ammo means that there actually is a limit to the ammo. Cat's making litter box noises now. He's determined to derail this review. Oh, Wilfred. But anyways.
Diddy.
Yeah, he'll be jumping out of that thing and roaring in a minute.
Pay attention to me.
Yeah. So anyways, the game has an interesting thing, and I hardly ever see this in twin stick shooters, but you have limited ammo. You have to pick up ammo as you get through the stages, and if you run out, then you're kind of at the mercy of the enemies, or you can sometimes reach your spawn point and actually pick up another, like, set of, you know, standard ammo and get through it. So that's a really interesting one. You actually do have to conserve bullets, which makes this not at all like a shmup.
Yeah, normally most twin sticks, like, you'll have at least have a basic weapon that has infinite ammo.
Yes, but even your basic weapon in this game is limited. So, yeah. But there's a good variety of weapons to choose from. The tutorial especially introduces a whole bunch of them. Like, there's sticky bombs, there's, like, bouncing off the wall lasers, there's some lasers that can actually bounce back and hurt you, which is rude. but either way, yeah, as you collect these things in the stages and, kind of work your way through, you end up unlocking more weapons and power-ups and things like that that you can then choose to load out with for your next game. So this is my favorite kind of roguelike, and that is the one that you actually do get progressively better items that you can, you know, get in your loadout and then more progress. So it's kind of all about, you know, this game is a long con. It's, you're going to throw yourself out there and get killed a million times. And then eventually you're going to end up with the right amount of items that will allow you to survive even longer. And then, you know, eventually, hopefully reach the end. But I definitely didn't reach the end yet because this game is very hard. It's an interesting thing is that, like, the enemies that they send after you, like, really none of them are just your standard arrow fodder. Pretty much, like, I got killed within the first room, like, several times.
Wow.
And, yeah. So, like, you really have to take everything seriously in this game and really pay attention to it. But yeah, like, apart from that, the aesthetics are interesting. They use cartoony kind of sprites, and they use a scale and rotate kind of feature that makes me think of, like, just a really fancy version of the Super Nintendo. Like, you know, your sprites rotate and everything like that. Yeah. But of course, it's much more advanced than that. But I like the way it looks. The enemies are a little hard to tell sometimes what they were supposed to be. But I mean, I guess that's how it is with alien ships. You know, it was interesting to look at. The soundtrack is, you know, thumpy electronics, synthy stuff. So, you know, that's good enough for sure. Yeah, more or less, this is the kind of game that, if you enjoy twin stick shooters, but you want a little bit more of a thinker's game, that is to say, basically kind of like a stealth game almost, you
gotta
know, like
use some strategery.
Yeah. You gotta use that strategery. Like George W. Bush said,
yeah.
then yeah, this is a good game, but those who are looking for like the next, you know, like a different kind of shmup are going to have to look elsewhere, because this game really, despite its looks, has very little to do with a classic shoot 'em up, except for the difficulty.
All right. Well, overall, $8. What do you say?
$8, I think, is a good price for an experiment like this. I certainly think it's an interesting title, and I'll be playing more of it. And yeah, I think it's worth trying for $8. Like I said, just, you know, think along the lines of games like Neon Chrome and things like that, where it's more about doing, like, surviving as long as you can, more than, like, going for the top score or, you know, getting through the same 5 levels to try and, you know, hit those higher difficulties. This one is all about the random adventure aspect of it. So, yeah, I'd say it's worth it in that context.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Cool.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. It's been another long, successful one. A lot of good games that we talked about. Fun stuff. Thanks to everyone who came on and did their thing. Chris, thanks to you as well for coming on and doing your thing as well.
Yeah.
Music this episode, we're going to play a couple of songs off the River City Girl soundtrack.
Hell yeah.
From Megan McDuffie. The soundtrack is fantastic. The game is fantastic. Absolutely worth picking up both of them. I'm happy I grabbed the soundtrack. 50 yeah. songs on iTunes for $10.
Wow. That's amazing. I'm actually close to pre-ordering the physical version myself. So haven't downloaded it yet, but I will be getting this one.
Nice. So yeah. Do you have any final words to end the show?
I think Wilfred pretty much said it all. Meow, 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 meow.
We And she cracked my skull with a pasta plate. Said, I don't mean no harm.
Oh, no.
And then she broke my arm.
Just go.
And that's the kind of charm that I appreciate. I've always got a concussion.
Please don't die, not for a day.
My spine's been fractured six times.
Oh,
the fastest way to this boy's heart is to take me down with martial arts.